Good morning again. Our opening words by Gretchen Haley are responsive words this morning, but your line is simple. You have one word, rise. So when I indicate that it's your line, you say rise. You with me? That is yours and ours.
Rise.
Because the earth remains our only home, and we, fellow travelers, it's our only hope for healing, wholeness.
Rise.
Before the mystery, before the Big Bang that started it all, that this infinite universe,
rise.
Or surrender with gratitude for this beauty, this chance to be a part of it all, to give back to life, past, present, future, everywhere, always, as one. Come, let us worship together. Let us. We light this chalice, the flame of our heritage, in solidarity with the Unitarian Universalists and the peoples of the world, lighting candles of planetary hope. May it ignite a spirit of solidarity and enthusiasm for the new world we can create together. These are words by Peggy Clark. And now, may we please, in body or in spirit, hymn number 163. Our reading this morning comes from Winona LaDuke. She states, "We must create the future we want. In our Anishinaabe prophecies, it is told of a time when we would have a choice between two paths. One path would be well-worn but scorched, and the other path would be green. This is known as the prophecy of the seventh fire. And that is where we are today. As the death of one black snake this week shows us, this is a moment when we can do something. We are not just fighting against something, but clearly and decidedly walking with open eyes and hearts down the path that is green. This is our opportunity to do the righteous thing. We call this land Anishinaabe Aki'ing. This is the land we belong to, and we will continue to protect it as our ancestors did before us. This is our covenant with the Creator and with the Mother Earth. Let us take time to be grateful for this victory. Let us celebrate the courage and the commitment it took from all of us, and let us keep moving forward." Thus ends the reading. So on Friday, millions of people worldwide poured into the streets in a global strike to end climate change. It was a strike, as Michelle alluded to, that began with a single voice of a single teenager striking over a year ago. For those that marched and for those that watched the reports of those marches on social media or television, or listened to the radio or read it in the papers, the enormous response was hopefully energizing, hopeful, positive, that this many people across the world were coming together to save the world is amazing and historic and something that we needed and that hopefully will make a difference. Teenager and activist Greta Thunberg said in a statement back in January of this year, "Adults keep saying, we owe it to the young people to give them hope. But I don't want your hope. I don't want you to be hopeful. I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear that I feel every day. And then I want you to act. I want you to act as you would in a crisis. I want you to act as if our house is on fire, because it is." So Friday was supposed to be the start of a week of climate crisis activism. So if, like me, and like maybe 90% of us, you didn't actually strike on Friday, the good news is your efforts are still needed. The bad news is your efforts are still needed. Despite millions coming together on Friday, more efforts are still needed. Because at the end of the day, when the strike was done, nothing was completely changed, perhaps, except our hearts, our attention, and our minds. The corporations on Friday, some were shut down and some doubled down. There were some improvements announced. Jeff Bezos said that Amazon will be carbon neutral by 2040. But that's 20 years from now, and our Earth doesn't have that long for Amazon's footprint to change. Meanwhile, the package I got from Amazon yesterday came in its plastic bubble wrap, as usual, with everything under that shrink-wrapped in plastic, even though the products themselves, which were in this case DVDs, were already inside protective plastic boxes. 7,000 companies donated ad space or put banners on their website supporting the environment, but how many of them changed their carbon footprint this week? How many changed their products to reduce waste, to stop runoff, to end the carbon emissions? Now, our faith has a lot to say about stewardship of the earth. It's no coincidence that thousands of Unitarian Universalists were probably among those who were striking on Friday for the earth. We have a long history in Unitarian Universalism of speaking up and acting out on this issue. Our Unitarian forefather, Henry David Thoreau, of course, was one of America's great nature writers and gave us, in our tradition, a love for and a reverence for nature. And our principles call us to honor and respect the web of life and to learn from nature-based religions as a religious source. Our movement as a whole has voted for numerous resolutions for protecting the earth, the environment, and its creatures. Most recently, at the last General Assembly, we passed an action of immediate witness in support of the Green New Deal. But we passed something environmental related almost every year over the last two decades at General Assembly. In 2018, we passed a statement of solidarity with Indigenous people working to protect the water supply. In 2015, a statement on global climate agreement. In 2014, we passed a business resolution committing ourselves to fossil fuel divestment. And in the year before, a statement also on fossil fuel divestment. In 2011, a statement of conscience on ethical eating. The list continues. In 2009, we supported America's Red Rock Wilderness Act. In 2008, we passed an action of immediate witness to extend the tax credit for wind and solar power. In 2006, a statement on mountaintop removal coal mining, and also a statement of conscience on the threat of global warming and climate change. Statements of conscience in our association are something, actions of immediate witness are something that where we come together that year and say, this is something immediately happening, we have to say something now. Statements of conscience are something we work on over a several year process that develop out of a study action issue, the congregation study, and then we pass them more deliberately. So that statement of conscience only happens every couple of years, and the fact that we've had so many on the earth is a powerful testament in itself. In 2002, we passed endorsed the Earth Charter Action of Immediate Witness, and in 2001, a responsible consumption is our moral imperative statement of conscience again. So those are just the statements we've passed in the last two decades. But it goes back for decades before that. In 1969, and these are just the 1960s, we passed a general resolution on the environment in 1969, a general resolution on nuclear power in 1967, a general resolution on natural resources in 1966, and a general resolution on the population in 1962. We don't do general resolutions as much anymore. And we didn't pass any earlier than 1962 because our association was founded in 1961. That's when the Unitarians and Universalists merged. So we've been doing this from the very beginning, making statements of who we are as a people, and that is directly related, our faith is directly related to this earth and to the need to stop global warming, climate change, and protect the earth and its living creatures. We have a long and proud history of support in activism in this area, but it has not, of course, been enough, not nearly enough. And the people of this earth have continued policies that leave dead zones in our oceans, trash islands in our oceans, our waters rising from global warming, forests still being erased, mountains of trash piling, as we discovered that we'd been diligently recycling only to ship our recyclables all the way to China where they were ending up as trash. One of my favorite dystopian novels, and yes, I have read so many dystopias that I can talk about my favorite dystopian novels. One of my favorites is Octavia Butler's The Parable of the Sower. And it also has a sequel, The Parable of the Talents. In these books, it's a near future America. Democracy is still nominally in place, but climate change has caused a decay of our society, and fires are devastating California in particular. Many people are migrating northwards in hope of creating new lives in a more fertile place. It's one of my favorite novels because it feels so very much like right now. It's something that isn't too far-fetched at all, unlike some dystopians that have to do with a much more distant America or world. These novels, though, are ultimately hopeful because the heroes of the stories, Lauren Olamina, gathers a group of people around herself, and she starts building the society she dreams of, which she calls Earthseed. She has a vision that they will leave Earth and go to outer space and colonize a new planet, and that that's the future for humanity. But the thing is, that vision isn't really important to the entire books and what happens in them. And whether or not they get there, I'm not going to tell you the spoilers, because that's not the important part. Much more important is the work that they do here on Earth. They start a small farming society, and they live off the land. They rebuild the important things about society for themselves, school for their children, for example. And I find these dystopian novels hugely hopeful, because the fires are burning, and the people are migrating, and the land is dying, and our government is corrupt and complicit, and we are living in dystopia in so many ways, and yet there is always, always something that sings, always some hope, that little thing with feathers, always something more we can do. We are only a few small, dedicated individuals, but we make up part of a global community. And what we saw is that on Friday, what we saw on Friday is that climate change is no longer a fringe idea of a liberal elite institution. It is something that has gained national, international attention at last. And with the death of one of the Koch brothers this month comes the beginning, I think, of the death of one of the biggest engines of climate denial. The people of this country are starting to see that climate denial was a corporate invention designed to protect corporate interests. And the farmers are seeing that their crops are dying. And the fishers are seeing the dead zones in the ocean. The Amazon employees are seeing the piles and piles of plastic wrap and excess packaging and fossil fuels used for distribution. And they are striking together for climate change. But we cannot stop here. The corruption in government won't stop because of this strike, and the corporate interests in the status quo and in keeping things as inexpensive as possible to raise their own profits and stakeholder interests won't stop because of this strike. The strike is only the beginning. Our house is on fire, and we have to act with urgency now. So we have to keep up this momentum. We have to demand climate change plans from all of our politicians, plans that have real urgency and real teeth. We need to demand it from the Democrats, but we also need to demand it from the Republicans and from the independents. And we cannot settle for plans that, like Amazon, take until 2040 to complete. These plans have to have the urgency of knowing that our house is on fire and take dramatic action in the next few years, take dramatic action next year and the year after and the year after that. So we have to take this energy from the strike and we have to lobby, lobby, lobby. We have to write and call our congressional representatives and demand change and demand it now, doing it on a local, state, and national level. And then write and call your friends in other states, in red states, purple states, and blue states, and ask them to contact their representatives too. We have to continue to decrease personal consumption, but we also need to put real pressure on the corporations. Pick your favorite excess packaging item and contact the company and ask for change. Demand change. Ask your grocers to stop making plastic bags available at both checkout and produce aisles. Pick your favorite items that come in plastic and contact your shampoo or deodorant or detergent companies and ask them to invest in packaging their products in ecologically friendly containers. Contact food companies and ask them to stop using the fertilizer that is killing our fish as the fertilizer runs with the water to the sea. Corporate America responds to its consumers. Remember when Big Macs came in styrofoam containers? You remember that? Some of you ate a Big Mac once in a while, or you saw this on television, or heard about it on NPR, right? We changed those styrofoam containers through consumer activism. That's what changed it. Not because McDonald's wanted to change its packaging, but because consumers consistently, routinely, constantly demanded that they get rid of styrofoam. It's our demands that have made energy companies offer more sustainable energy sources. It's our demands that have gotten Nestle to stop using unsustainable palm oil and to go with sustainably produced palm oil. It's our activism that's gotten Staples to increase their recycled content in the paper that they produce, and numerous other corporate reforms. Now, our Climate Change Task Force has a list of things you can do this week and beyond, which range from the personal to the political and include community in the middle. I would add to those very good ideas that leveraging the power of social media is tremendous. Now, my social media feeds are biased because it includes a number of you, but also a tremendous number of Unitarian Universalist ministers in my Facebook feed. But all I saw for the last 2 days in social media when I opened up Facebook was pictures of climate strike. That is the only thing I saw. And that's powerful. The power of images and words to affect change is tremendous. If this feels like something momentous, it's partly because you're seeing it through your media, and that includes social media. That's part of making it something that affects the world, is that we talk about it and we broadcast about it. And if the corporate media doesn't share the information, the social media will. When you have a president who tweets constantly, a powerful tool in the hands of the people is Twitter. Now, regardless of your politics, that's true. We know that corporations and politicians take note when their Facebook pages are inundated with posts. It only takes one person to start any movement towards change, and our youth are leading the way. I remember when several years ago a single Girl Scout started a movement to get all the Girl Scout cookies to use sustainable palm oil because palm oil production was creating havoc. It still is, tearing down rainforests. And through a system of engaging Girl Scouts in activism, she managed to get the system to change. And all Girl Scout cookies have sustainable palm oil today. Now, those cookies are produced by a major corporation. It's not just Girl Scout Cookie Corporation. It's Kellogg, right? So they got Kellogg to change. Greta Thunberg started with one person herself protesting in front of one school, and it's become a worldwide protest that we saw. So we know that if the youth, with their few years and lack of experience, can make such change, it is powerful, but it is also possible for any of us to do likewise. But I don't want to leave you on too much of a note of hope today, because this movement has to have some hope at its core, lest we get so discouraged we don't even try, but it needs to have more than hope. It needs to have steely determination. It needs to have urgency and persistence and a fiery sense of justice and a sense of what is possible. We need to keep fighting, to keep marching, to keep lobbying, keep networking, keep organizing for social change. And we do have some strengths for this work. We have persistence, we have networking, we have allies, we have our core religious values of liberal religion and the partnerships we've built in our communities. And now, Now, more than ever before, we have momentum and we have the eye of the world. We have a sense of urgency, too, like never before. And so we will keep on striking, keep on lobbying, keep on writing and speaking and fighting, and keep on until we turn the world around. May it be so. Benediction are the words of Joanna Macy. Let's drop the notion that we can manage our planet for our own comfort and profit, or even that we can now be its ultimate redeemers. It is a delusion. Let's accept in its place the radical uncertainty of our time, even the uncertainty of survival.